You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. Happy Friday, 7:06. Nice to have you back here up north on this October 17th, 2025. Parker Olson producing things down in Madison Studio A2. And, of course, on Fridays, we have our stellar Week in Review panel with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel and journalist Mark Jacobs and Jennifer Tolsey all here. 1 hour from now, we'll be talking to State Senator Jeff Smith of Eau Claire. And we'll be talking on the campaign side of things because of redistricting. Now, there were new maps, new fairer maps for Wisconsin voters the last go-round, finally, after more than a decade of rigged maps that Republicans had gerrymandered. And it made a difference in 2024. There was turnover in several assembly seats because things got a little bit more representative of the actual Wisconsin electorate. Well, it didn't impact all of the state Senate races because state Senate terms are 4 years instead of two. And so only half the Senate is up for re-election every 2 years. So that means that next year in 2026, the other half of the state Senate is going to have some interesting races with people in new districts, because in some places, people were drawn into similar districts. Republican Senator Jesse James of the Altoona area and Democratic Senator Jeff Smith of Eau Claire had been in two separate districts. They're now in the same district, where they will be for next year. And Jesse James made official yesterday that he is going to challenge Democrat Jeff Smith. Jeff Smith has said that he's going to run for re-election. And so these two incumbents will be squaring off in what is definitely a proxy for the way that the entire 2026 is going to shape up, with a race for governor, races for Congress, and this big battle for a key seat in the Wisconsin legislature. And so Jeff Smith is going to talk to us about the race and so far the case that he is building for Wisconsin voters. That's all coming up in just a little bit. Again, a reminder that you can sign up for our Unabashedly Wisconsin News by heading over to upnorthnewswi.com and clicking subscribe up in the top banner. Today's edition includes, from Ellie Bordeaux, our new newsletter editor, a small business shout out on Fridays, this time geared specifically to local pizza places. And we rattled off a few of them in our last hour. We'll try to bring it back up a little bit later on, but you'll want to see that newsletter to see who the readers saluted for having among the best local pizza places in Wisconsin. You, of course, are free to also nominate some business. Just get in the comment section of YouTube or Facebook, where you can watch us do the radio show, the Up North News Facebook or YouTube pages, or the Civic Media Facebook or YouTube pages, and put a comment there about pizza. In fact, Rob does from Tigerton. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. It's cloudy, 54 degrees, picked up just about a tenth of an inch of rain with some lightning and thunder too. Last night, he had homemade pizza at his sister Lori's house in Caroline, and it was excellent. So I guess that's not a local pizza joint. You can't go to Caroline's house necessarily. And he says, today I get to try a new place in Tigerton called the Jaeger Bomb Bar and Grill. It's great to support a new local business.
Oh boy.
Can we say what Greg Bach said during the commercial break? Probably not. We'll just say the Sloppy Drunk Saloon. I mean, Jaeger, but you're naming the place for Jaeger Bombs.
Yeah.
That's something right there. But hey, it's a bar and grill. So how do you incorporate Jägermeister into your
That means you've got ammo for
we also talked about National Pasta Day, and Tony up in Ashland puts on YouTube ravioli, but only from the classically trained Chef Boyardee. Real class.
That's fair.
Well, that or the like Greg said, the Franco-American that he and I grew up with.
I'm not familiar with that.
So we'll take your nominations, favorite local pizza joint, favorite pasta, and maybe your favorite bar names too, because Jaeger Bomb Bar and Grill, that's got to go up there on the list of some of the best, most classically Wisconsin bar names that are out there. All right. Like I said, Jeff Smith in the next hour, but I want to talk about something that was done at the state government level yesterday, right now, when it comes to the state budget. And we haven't talked about this for a while because the state budget has been written for the next 2 years to fund education and, you know, take care of our natural resources, our roads, infrastructure, all the things here that make Wisconsin such a great place to live. And we have for a number of years now had a budget surplus once we came out of the pandemic. And again, Wisconsin had a really nice recovery coming out of the pandemic and then had a surplus. Yes, there was a chunk of that was federal pandemic aid, but there was also because people continued to work in Wisconsin and generate taxes because we didn't, our unemployment situation was better here than in other states, that also contributed to things. So Governor Tony Evers yesterday put out a press release with an update on the state surplus. And the press release reads in part, Governor Tony Evers today celebrated Wisconsin's continued fiscal success and outlook despite continued national economic uncertainty and volatility. The Evers administration today announced that the state ended the fiscal year back on July 1st with a positive balance of $4.6 billion in the general fund. That would be the state's main checking account. So they ended the year with a $4.5 billion surplus, which exceeded all previous estimates. Additionally, the state's rainy day fund now stands at $2 billion, the largest balance in state history, and more than six times what it was prior to the governor taking office. And that should all be, you know, a reason for everybody, Republicans as well as Democrats, to say, yep, let's give ourselves a little pat on the back. Really nice job. Job well done. We don't always agree on things, but let's celebrate the fact that while other states are struggling, we still have a $4.5 billion surplus. But no, that wasn't good enough for State Assembly Representative Jerry O'Connor, Republican of Fond du Lac, who felt the need to put out a press release that said, the $4.6 billion surplus is a result of strong fiscal responsibility by legislative Republicans over the past decade. Contrary to how the governor has misleadingly framed the report, this is not the result of his fiscal planning. If our tax and spend governor had enacted his proposed budgets, we would have a scarily different report and fiscally dire situation to discuss. Well, a statement like that deserves a proper response, and so here it is. Give me a break. You guys needed to be dragged kicking and screaming to support the people whose taxes helped fill those coffers in the first place. You would have been happy to let the surplus money sit there and collect dust until you could do with it what Donald Trump is doing with our federal treasury right now. Giving it away to the wealthy in the most reverse Robin Hood style seen in this country since the first Gilded Age. You talk about tax and spend things that Governor Evers would have done. I don't know. Where do you want to start? Should we start with the nearly $2 million you cut for services to homeless veterans? I mean, veterans haven't forgotten how you literally cut that line to $0 and tried to blame anybody else but yourselves. There's also the zero new dollars in general state school aids. Yes, there was some money put in other specific parts of the education budget, but generally, well, it turns out that the official numbers have come out for Wisconsin's 421 school districts, and only 26% will receive more general state aid this year than the last school year, while 301 districts, 71% of school districts in Wisconsin, are getting less general state aid. And frankly, you had to be dragged kicking and screaming to even that point when you'd rather keep starving our children's education. As a result, we will continue to see more school referendums in Wisconsin hiking property taxes because of this lazy legislature. Don't forget the Child Care Accounts program. You killed that as well. Some extra child care money elsewhere in the budget is not going to stop the ongoing wave of child care providers who are getting out of business, forcing more parents into financial or personal crises. There's also the fact that you haven't accepted the federal boost for Medicaid to cover more families. Oh, sure, Donald Trump is gutting it for now, but up to this point, you have cost the state billions of dollars because of your ongoing temper tantrum that the Affordable Care Act passed. It was 15 years ago. Let it go, man. And take care of your constituents who need your help, not your right-wing talking points or your lectures. And then finally, there is that state's rainy day fund, which now stands at $2 billion, which you didn't touch during a pandemic. When COVID was new, when Wisconsinites were losing their jobs left and right, when Governor Evers was trying anything possible to try to make sure that families were supported, y'all took 9 months off, never came into the Capitol, let that rainy day fund just sit there. What good is a rainy day fund for emergencies if you guys decide to take a paid vacation during a national emergency? So no, you don't get to lecture this governor on financial responsibility. It was his shepherding of federal pandemic funds that gave Wisconsin one of the healthiest post-pandemic recoveries in the country. When you would have let Main Street businesses wither and die so long as WMC's members could keep their big, fat corporate tax breaks. So you can put out all the press releases you want, but you will face voters next year under fairer maps who wonder what the heck it is you guys do for a living to earn your taxpayer-funded paycheck. So cash those taxpayer-funded paychecks while you can, because there is no guarantee that after next year, you're going to be around to squander a state surplus any longer. It's 7:17 right now. And again, as we have mentioned a couple of times, there are going to be No Kings rallies all across the state. In fact, talking yesterday to Cindy Greening from Chippewa Valley Indivisible, at last count, 97 different locations in Wisconsin will be the site of No Kings rallies at some point during the day tomorrow. And the times vary widely. There are some that start as early as 9 in the morning in Little Medford across from the farmer's market. Many of them start at 11 o'clock, say in Shawano at Franklin Park. Some start at the noon hour, like in Friendship at the Adams County Courthouse. Others are in the afternoon, like Oshkosh starts at 1 o'clock at Hiker Park. But in Chippewa Falls, it doesn't get going until 4 o'clock at the Peace Circle. So head over to nokings.org to learn more about where you can take part and put your 2 cents in on what is happening in the state of this country right now. We're going to talk to our Week in Review panel in just a little bit about the state that our country is in right now, including the U.S. Supreme Court taking the next step toward completely gutting what remains of the Voting Rights Act. Troops in the streets of places like Chicago that are frustrating even to Chicago police because of the lack of coordination. But before we get to all of that news, we have the equally unhappy task of telling you that the Brewers are now down 3-0 in the National League Championship Series after losing the game last night at Dodger Stadium 3-1. 3 games now in the league championship series, just 3 runs scored for the Brewers. In the past 5 games, they have just 18 hits. That's the fewest amount of hits in any 5-game stretch in team history. Not exactly the kind of time that you want to pick for setting that kind of a team record. However, we keep the 2004 Boston Red Sox in mind because at least once, a team has come back from a 3-0 postseason deficit to win a 7-game series. So there's that. Our Week in Review panel is coming up live from the lake. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Thanks for listening to us here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back in a bit.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All right, please forgive me. I was so deep in the pity pool of the Brewers losing to the Dodgers in Game 3 that I neglected to tell you that there is a Game 4, and that is tonight. Coverage begins at 7 o'clock tonight on several Civic Media radio stations. First pitch at 7:38, and of course, we are hoping that we don't get a Dodgers sweep in four games. If there is a game five, that will take place tomorrow in Los Angeles. And if the Brewers happen to win tonight and tomorrow, then game six would be Monday at American Family Field. And if we're really getting crazy and there's a game seven, that would be Tuesday night at American Family Field. So, you know, keep hope alive. We got that going for us. Time to talk to our Week in Review panel, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, along with Chicago journalist Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze, all here joining us now. Good morning to
Good morning,
all
everybody.
Of you guys. Good morning.
Good
morning.
Good to see you all. Let's start with Mark, because you know, a lot of the foundation of this segment was, you know, grading the media for the way they covered the week's events. And Mark has literally done that now. The title of his latest newsletter is "I'm Handing Out Pro-Democracy Grades to the Media." Read more at stopthepresses.news or couriernewsroom.com. Professor Jacob, let's hear about those grades.
Yeah, it was a little haughty of me to do that, but
you know what? This show is built for haughty.
Yeah. But I mean, people ask me all the time, you know, I mean, there are two things going on here. One, people on social media say you can't trust anything in the media. Don't pay attention to anything. It's all, you know, which to me is a formula for disaster. I mean, if you don't believe in anything, then you just, you know, you camp out on your couch and watch old movies and Trump does right. What he wants.
Yeah.
So to me, that's not an option. And people have asked me, what do I regard as credible media? And, you know, I mentioned the Guardian gets an A, ProPublica gets an A, The New Republic gets an A. MSNBC, B+. If they got rid of Joe Scarborough, I'd like them better. You know, and I go through it. The New York Times, they give a C, but maybe they slide to D if some days. You know, it's hard to know. And NPR, I just wish they were better. I gave them a C, and CNN, C-.
Hey, let me stop you at the NPR there, because I am not a regular listener because of all my work, you know, here on another radio network. So when I hear you give NPR a C, I'm a little surprised. Tell me why.
Well, it's because it's this legitimizing of lies. You know, okay. they decide that in order to be fair, they're going to have Democrats on, they're going to have Republicans on. And if it's a Republican who is a liar, which unfortunately today is most of them, they will, the Republican will lie and lie and lie and lie. And then the NPR host will say, thank you, please come back. You know, there's okay. Not the kind of pushback that should happen. I mean, what I've been saying for a long time is that the journalists need to be so respectful of the truth that they are personally and professionally offended when somebody lies to them and their audience, and they need okay. To push back. And if you don't do that, you're not really defending democracy.
And I totally get the grades that you would give, say, you know, the Wall Street Journal and Fox News. But I want to ask you about one other one, because not everybody sees the commercials for News Nation. Not everybody knows about it. They're certainly trying to brand themselves as this independent, you know, new news network. And yet you put that in your F column. Why?
Yeah, because, well, they're not unbiased. I mean, they really want to be a right wing network, but they want to pretend that they're fair and balanced. You know, because Chris Cuomo is there. He's a star, and he got kicked out of CNN for ethical breaches, and they keep on having Bill O'Reilly, you know, because of Bill O'Reilly's, you know, sexual harassment, Fox News has paid millions of dollars to people at Fox News. I mean, these are not legitimate people. And then News Nation rode along on that horrible ICE raid on the south side of Chicago, where they, you know, rappelled from helicopters and terrorized people. They brought News Nation along on that, and, you know, because they could trust them to give the administration side.
Okay. Well, now let's get the professor graded by Professor Schulze, who I'm sure has looked. Do you take issue with any of your friend Mark's grades?
I was mostly in agreement with Mark. I would have, you know, edged a little bit here and there on some of them. I would give a higher grade to NBC News. Overall, I'm a big fan of NBC because it is currently the only news network that has not written a check to Donald Trump. And that's like a big deal. And I think they do really good work, especially on certain issues. So I'm a bigger fan of NBC. I do agree with Mark on pretty much everything else, however. News Nation. No, they are not. I used to say they were Fox Light, I think they are now at least Fox Medium.
Okay. Fox Medium. I like that very much. And I will say this about NBC. Having worked at an NBC affiliate for many years, I find that particularly frustrating because they, yes, they have their moments, but they have fallen so far in some areas. And Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, you get to provide your own take on these grades as a viewer, as a news consumer. I don't know what else that you're taking in, but do you want to hand out either A's or F's for anything that you notice as you watch coverage of things?
I'll seize on this enterprise and just say once again, on Wednesday, when the United States Supreme Court all but announced that the Voting Rights Act is going to be done as of June of 2026, the New York Times has a headline that says, Supreme Court appears skeptical of key provision of Voting Rights Act. That's the headline. The reality is that we had members of the Supreme Court led by Brett Kavanaugh saying on the record, quizzing the attorneys, how quickly can we get rid of this? Aren't we done with race now in America? And isn't it time for Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act to be over? That's more than skepticism, New York Times. That's signaling that America is about to change once again dramatically at the pen of the Supreme Court, robbing us of yet another, the core, this shining gem of the civil rights movement, legislatively, it's about to be gone. And that's the response of the New York Times.
Again, calling out extremism as extremism is not bias. That is actually the more accurate reporting. We will continue this conversation with Jim Santel, Mark Jacob, and Jennifer Scholze coming up right after this little pause. And then at the top of the hour, State Senator Jeff Smith. And then we'll have Mike Clemens with a weekend preview of sports. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north. We sure do like it when you take us along with you on the radio, listen in your car, or listen through the Civic Media app. But sometimes you can't get the whole 3 hours in one setting, and maybe you want to listen later on demand. Well, we've got a podcast for that. All you got to do is head over to Spotify or Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow this show as a podcast. Each hour is a different episode of the podcast. So, you know, 6, 7, and 8 a.m. hours, you can pick the hour that you want to listen to, catch up with guests, catch up with topics, and get some fodder for sending us a note with your questions or comments. Again, follow us as a podcast over at Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Back to our week in review panel now with Jim Santel, Mark Jacob, and Jennifer Scholze. And Jennifer's column, her latest one on Substack, Indistinct Chatter is the name of it. Search for News Jennifer at Substack. And the headline is, the abuses of federal power are far worse here in Chicago. Don't look away. Jennifer, what are you trying to tell folks?
Well, I want to remind people who may not be aware or on listening to the news every day about what's happening in Chicago, that something very bad is happening here. And it's getting worse every day. You know, federal courts, as Jim has pointed out, have issued orders, and ICE is ignoring them. You know, they've been told not to do harsh treatment towards the press or the protesters. Well, yesterday they were flinging those tear gas canisters like mad at everybody again after being ordered not to. They've been ordered not to wear their masks or wear cameras. And it's a very serious thing that's happening here. And I think that the whole country should be paying attention to it. I think the local press in Chicago is doing a phenomenal job covering the story and getting the facts out. What we found is that every single time the Department of Homeland Security issues a press release about an incident that happens in Chicago, it's mostly lies. In fact, I'm going to probably go with it's all lies. And the press here is really digging into those things. And then, of course, the residents with the videos of what actually happened is helping tell the story. I wish there was more national press here on an ongoing basis, because I think this story is really important to the country.
Let's take that point as I bring it over to Mark for his thoughts, being in Chicagoland as well, that again, maybe it was just because first it was DC and then it was Los Angeles that, oh, troops on the streets of a city, not a big deal. But Mark, you think national media should be paying more attention to this as well?
Oh, I sure do. I mean, and there's some of it, but there's not enough. And because what the scary thing is, Trump said it in his himself. He said he wants to use, you know, troops in American cities as training grounds for the military. I mean, that should scare the hell out of everyone. Mm-hmm. And he really does plan to do it, you know, throughout the entire country, I think. And he's starting in, you know, big cities that voted against him. I mean, Pat, it's not like he's targeting cities that have high crime rates. He's because Chicago's homicide rate has fallen, you know, dramatically. He's targeting places that voted against him because he's trying to crush dissent. And if you see it in any other way, if you see it, well, this is Trump's attempt to lower the crime rate. Well, then you're just buying into the lies.
Yeah. James, there's just so many court challenges to what he is doing with troops that I don't know. Maybe you do follow all of them. I just wonder if, again, because of Trump's clear flood the zone strategy, is there any single case that, frankly, all the resources should be put into to try to get the court system to ultimately say you can't do this?
Once again, I would say that the lower federal courts, your district courts, your appeals courts, are doing the right thing, and that is not a political assessment. That's a constitutional assessment that they're upholding the law. They're upholding the ways in which, as Mark and Jennifer just said, that America works. And so we should be celebrating those even tomorrow in the demonstrations and the protests and the advocacy around our nation. You know, just yesterday, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals said yes to Judge April Perry. She is the one who has said, you know what? The National Guard can be there physically, but don't you dare deploy them, Donald Trump. The Seventh Circuit, a three-judge panel, said yes. This is not a close question. The National Guard not to go in. They are different, plainly. Listeners appreciate this from the ICE and all the things that Jennifer has just identified. But there are, once again, the lower federal courts are still across the country looking at these things and saying there is no insurrection. We've got no rebellion. There's no justification for doing this. No crime that would justify this. And that's a reason for solace. The difficulty, the profound difficulty, of course, is what happens when these get to those nine folks in Washington, D.C., who seem to be inclined to give the president whatever he wants. Tanji Brown Jackson calling it Calvin Ball, which basically means there are no rules anymore and the administration wins. That's the concern. But we should take some solace in the fact that there are good and decent judges across the board politically who are doing the right thing in America.
Let's look at a different case that's going to come for the courts because of the new indictment handed down against one of Trump's early national security advisors, John Bolton, who then became a critic of Trump and therefore became an enemy and is now facing criminal charges. And I can't say that I'm terribly surprised. We'd all know the saying, everything Trump touches dies. I mean, everybody that has tried to say, oh, I'm the one that can tame him, has found out, no, it doesn't work that way. And so whether it's this new one or it's James Comey or the other cases, Jim, what is it about this new one with John Bolton? What can we glean from this about the way that Donald Trump has weaponized the United States law enforcement system in a way that only a wannabe dictator can?
Yep. There is a takeaway from the Bolton indictment that also underscores the notion that he is going after his political adversaries. You might think, gee, aren't those all the same? Let me parse that apart. About 18 counts yesterday, he's basically accusing him of using personal email and messaging to share about 1,000 pages of his diary notes. There's some very interesting issues related to attempt at extortion from someone who is going to release them. Interesting things here, but that larger point is the one that you were implicitly stating, Pat, which is just this. We know that the indictments against James Comey and against Letitia James are paper thin as an evidentiary matter, almost certainly not going to be able to prove those cases beyond a reasonable doubt, and may, even before you get there, be subject to a vindictive prosecution dismissal. The problem here with the Bolton matter, which has been under investigation for a long period of time, is this may be one of those cases where his political enemies, that is Donald Trump's political enemies, may indeed have actually committed a crime. And so the problem is that when you indict someone who has committed a crime, but also happens to be on this laundry list of all the people the president hates, the natural reaction is to say, of course, that prosecution, perhaps legitimate, again, he's innocent until proven guilty, that prosecution may also be illegitimate and therefore also subject to the attack in court and out court that it's vindictive. That may or may not be the case, but it underscores the problem. When you've got a president who's out there, who's saying these things, who's telling people that he doesn't like these, and demanding that his Department of Justice indict people, when you do get to a legitimate prosecution, and that person happens to be on your list of enemies, that one also gets thrown into the bin of illegitimate prosecutions. I fear for the future of the grand jury process and the legitimacy of what Americans appreciate about criminal federal prosecution in America.
It just, Mark, makes your head spin to see a president of the United States in the Oval Office with the Attorney General, with the FBI Director, with the Assistant Attorney General saying, not demanding or asking, because, you know, mob bosses know, you just say things out loud and then things magically happen. You know, I think that, you know, Senator Schiff of California is a criminal. Again, in any other time in our country, the media would have been doing their job.
Well, they're trying to do their job, but I mean, they are being overwhelmed to some extent. I just wish they'd come right out and say what's actually happening, which is, you know, Trump is trying to marshal all the power of the federal government against his enemies in a very vindictive and lawless way. You know, Pat, there's also this whole IRS report that just came out that he's organizing the IRS to go after a long list of people who fund leftist organizations or liberal organizations or just plain democratic organizations. And I mean, he's going after all of his enemies using all of the power that he's not supposed to have, but that he's claimed. And it should scare the hell out of everyone. He is trying to crush all opposition.
The IRS one, by the way, was specifically mentioned in Richard Nixon's Watergate impeachment. Again, this is the kind of stuff that would get a president impeached. But Jennifer, by Republican senators failing not once but twice to vote to convict Trump in legitimate impeachment charges against him, just makes me wonder if there is any way back from this precipice, or if we should just go ahead and start calling it what it is, martial law, when you've got troops in the streets and when you can give a persecution in the courts of your enemies, when you can use the IRS. I'm starting to wonder when the term martial law applies officially.
Well, hello, Pat. That just scared the heck out of me. I agree. Look, it's bad. And I think most people know that it's bad. You may not be able to keep up with every twist and turn because every day, you know, there are dozens of transgressions and, you know, breaking the law here. And it's just, it's overwhelming. But as Mark said, the overarching thing is that he's trying to squash the opposition and using troops and, you know, his Department of Justice, which is not really interested in justice anymore, as James has so correctly pointed out time and time again. It's an overwhelming time. Americans are going to have a little something to say about it, I think, very loudly tomorrow across the country. And, you know, where we go from here, oh, man, I don't know. It's a scary, very scary time.
Because again, you're incredulous that we're hearing about charges about mishandling classified documents from the guy who, hello, had boxes of classified documents in his bathroom and a defense secretary that was sending battle plans to people through Signal.
Right.
I mean, these are the people who are have the least amount of credibility to bring these kind of charges, and yet they are. Jim, we're going to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court on the Voting Rights Act, and then we're going to pause, and some folks will catch their local news, and the rest will hear us talk more about it on the Civic Media app. But give us the very beginnings of an overview of what the question was that the Supreme Court took up on the Voting Rights Act, and, you know, ultimately what that means.
right? Comes out of Louisiana. It is once again line drawing, as we do in Wisconsin, Illinois. And the question is, where there, the narrow question, but important question, is whether there should be two majority black districts. That's technically what's in front of the Supreme Court. But the larger issue is whether or not race can be used as a determinant factor in drawing those lines. Voting Rights Act since 1965, do the math, that's 60 years in America, has said that yes, indeed, you can bring challenges. And it appears yesterday that, led by Brett Kavanaugh, who asks, at what point does all of this end, that the intentional use of race to create districts comes to a conclusion? And that's a big takeaway. That was the focus of the oral argument for 2 hours. And again, presaging this notion that probably about 8 months, we're going to see the end of Section 2.
And to, again, this framing of addressing racism is somehow racist is absolutely mind-blowing, but still has legs in this day and age, which tells you, even after 60 years, how much longer, how much farther we have to go. Jim Zantel, Mark Jacob, and Jennifer Schulze are our guests, our stellar Week in Review panel. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Assuming that there is time left in this segment, and I work really hard too, we're going to put our panel on the spot, because in our newsletter this morning, sign up at upnorthnewswi.com, includes a little piece where we get some reader feedback on their favorite local pizza joints. And two of the people on this panel are from Chicago, so they are therefore pizza experts, and we're going to tell us where to get a slice next time you're in Chicago. Jim Zantel, of course, is a global traveler. He'll probably mention something in Italy, but maybe you can come up with a Wisconsin one. But again, you can see what our readers said over at upnorthnewswi.com. So we'll get to that, but first let's type or wrap up our discussion on the Voting Rights Act that Jim Zantel set up so nice for us from a legal standpoint. Jennifer, the problem with the argument that, oh, well, how long is this stuff supposed to stick around? It makes it sound like it's tied simply to the discrimination of, you know, the post-Civil War era, when the answer should be, how long do we keep addressing racism? Well, as long as there's racism, but apparently there's supposed to be a statute of limitations, and after which racism is okay, I guess, if I'm understanding Brett Kavanaugh correctly.
I think it's, yes, that is it. And it extends, beyond the Supreme Court to everything, right? I was just reading about how Florida has another new rule where you can't use certain words at any state-funded university in Florida. And some of them, of course, have to do with racism and diversity and things like that. You can't even use the words. So I think there's a move afoot to say it doesn't exist, or we will pretend it doesn't exist, and anything that touches it, we are going to get rid of. So laws, you know, courses, I mean, you name it, and people themselves. I mean, you know, Trump has purged people of color and women from the government. It's an across the board assault on what the reality of the country, and
And I think we got a very depressing look at it at the celebration mark of Charlie Kirk's life, that so many people bought into what he was selling. I mean, if you didn't understand why the court is trying to dismantle the Voting Rights Act before this, the comments on Charlie Kirk probably help illustrate it.
Yeah, I think there is this like kind of movement to say, well, you know, this isn't fair. You know, I mean, it's what it is a complete ignorance of history and where we're at. And the fact that systematically Black political power has been diminished in this country, you know, over centuries. And so now we have the situation in which the right wing majority on the Supreme Court seems to think that you can't use race to try to give Black people their, you know, fair representation based on their population. But the Republican Party, which is drawing the lines, can certainly use race to diminish Black political power. So, you know, so what's really happening here, if you look at the at it in a historical view, they're reinstituting Jim Crow in the South. I mean, that is what seems to be happening here. You know, back when Black people couldn't register to vote, they had to wait in long lines and answer stupid questions, and everything was done. The government was designed to keep Black people from having political power, and we're going back to that. That's to make America great again to these people.
It's funny that this is a group that believes racism doesn't exist, but Antifa does. that apparently, and I've never been to any of the meetings, but you know, what does it tell you, Mark, that they're working so hard to put spin on tomorrow's rallies about it being Antifa and paid educated? Caroline Leavitt, the White House spokes thing, you know, said, "Oh, the Democratic Party, their whole constituency is Hamas and just other disgusting things like that." But it tells you they're running a bit scared here.
Yeah, well, it's what I've been saying, which is, you know, they hold Congress, they hold the White House, they hold the Supreme Court, but we have people power, and that still matters in this country, and public opinion still scares them, and which is good. I mean, that's maybe the only thing that keeps us out of disaster. And yeah, they are making up all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, where it's all Marxist, it's all violent criminals, it's all, you know, this or that. You know, well, you know, 75 million people voted for the Democratic candidate for, you know, for president last year. And so are they trying to say that, you know, Leavitt said that the major constituency in the Democratic Party was Hamas people, violent criminals, and illegal immigrants. So do the math. I mean, is that possible? It's not.
Not for that many tens of millions of voters. Mark Jacobs' latest column is "I'm Handing Out Pro-Democracy Grades to the Media." Read more at stopthepresses.news and couriernewsroom.com. And if you ask Mark Jacob where he'd get his favorite pizza in the Chicago area, he would say,
"Well, there are a lot of good ones. Even if you go to a deep dish place, don't get deep dish. That's kind of a gimmick to me. I like the thin crust myself. And Connie's pizza is what I like."
There you go. And Jennifer Schulze, you can read her Indistinct Chatter column on Substack. Look for news.jennifer. Her latest, "The Abuses of Federal Power Are Far Worse Here in Chicago. Don't Look Away." But if you are in Chicago, Jennifer would tell you to get pizza where?
I agree with Mark. Thin crust. I go to Peace Pizza in Bucktown Wicker Park, which has a fantastic New Haven style, but they've made it Chicago, and it's amazing.
Okay, I've heard of Detroit style, but New Haven style? Okay, well, there's one for me to look at. And finally, Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, has Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Radio Network. You can hear it again on Sundays. And Jim would tell you his favorite place for a good local pizza shop is?
In the category of nothing but bad news this morning, my favorite place right down the street here in suburban Milwaukee, a place called Marty's Spectacular Deep Dish Thin Crust, has closed recently.
No!
So I need to come to Chicago to get the good stuff now. Marty's, we rest in peace.
Jim, you're killing me. Marty's now?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
This is why why we can't have nice things. We live in the strangest timeline. Jim Santel, Jennifer Schulze, Mark Jacob, thank you so much as always. Really appreciate it. Have a great start to your weekends.
You too.
All right.
Go to Nokia.
That's right. Yeah, go to your No Kings rally, nokings.org, for all the details. Senator Jeff Smith is standing by, and we are going to talk about redistricting and the shape of the 2026 race in the Chippewa Valley, amongst other Senate districts. Coming up, I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.